Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Thank you for staying tuned. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino, and I'm Corporate Counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. I want to let you know that we are having a little bit of trouble with our phone line, so we are unable at this time to put callers on the same call as the guests. So if you have a question for our guest, I please encourage you to call in. Ask Mallory your question. She will pass it along, and we will pass it along to the guest. And I apologize for that inconvenience. I know that folks like to engage in the issues, and we appreciate that very much when they can. And I apologize. They're working on the phone system, and we're trying to get that set up. Now I'd like to welcome back to your turn Tim Lee. He is with the Center for Individual Freedom, the organization that I work for, and he's come on to talk with us about a brand new study that has come out that talks about whether or not there happens to be any connection between global warming and hurricanes. Tim, thanks so much for joining us again this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Have you had a chance to look at the only thing that I've seen? Our local newspaper today, front page, bottom half of the fold, had a story about a fairly well-known, extremely well-respected NOAA scientist who has kind of flip-flop changed his position on the issue of the relationship between the strength of hurricanes or the increase in the number of hurricanes that we have seen as it relates to global warming. Have you had a chance to see that report?
Only briefly on that report, but I am familiar with the story. And, you know, it's a growing consensus that there is no connection there. And what you usually hear in terms of climate change and global warming is that, you know, that this is a closed question, and the consensus is that global warming is caused by man. But increasingly, we're seeing that the opposite is true. Just today, for instance, there was an event in Washington announcing 32,000 scientists disagreeing with the so-called consensus on global warming. 10,000 of them were PhDs in science. And so this is just one other example of that, this supposed connection between hurricanes and ocean temperatures or hurricanes and global warming. It's just a farce, and that's proven by the fact that in 2005 they all blamed the increased number of hurricanes on global warming. So you had Katrina and things of that sort. Then they predicted an even greater number of hurricanes in 2006. But what we indeed saw in 2006 was that we had, as I recall, zero hurricanes of great magnitude. And so obviously the people who were predicting that or making a correlation between global warming and hurricanes were flat out wrong, and this is just another example of that.
So what do folks do with this information now that has come out, that now there's a NOAA scientist who is changing his position on this issue? Is that reliable information, and how do you think the media spins this one, Tim?
Well, the mainstream media will ignore it, and to the degree that they have to spin it and it's called to their attention, they'll just say that, well, it's an isolated example, that the overwhelming consensus is in favor of connection between global warming and human activity, where that's just not the case. What you do get is a consensus of people who have a pecuniary interest in global warming being caused by man. So, for instance, university scientists and other people who stand to gain from endowments and other monetary aspects, studies and grants from different government or nonprofit groups, there might be a consensus amongst them, but outside of that, there really isn't. So to answer your question about the media, the major media will try to, again, either ignore it or cast this as some sort of isolated scientist, but in fact, that's not the case. As I just spoke of the 32,000 today here in Washington, D.C., that came out against this so-called consensus. So more and more we're seeing the tide turning. And
no pun intended, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You're down on the Gulf Coast there, so it takes on a different meaning. But, you know, it's just a matter of time till the media has to face up to this.
Well, how do folks respond then? I mean, you've still got Al Gore out there with the inconvenient truth. How do they get down to knowing what they can trust, who they can trust, and trying to filter everything that they're hearing?
Sure. Well, the first thing they can do is use their own common sense. For instance, the Great Lakes region, that used to be covered by glaciers. In fact, the Great Lakes wouldn't exist but for global warming back in the Ice Age. So they can understand at that point that global warming isn't necessarily caused by humans. There's no such thing as a still climate. The Earth's climate has never been steady from year to year. It's either increasing or decreasing in temperature. So that's the first thing people can do, is just think about it in a common sense manner and realize that that this thing isn't caused by human activity, that that's the very nature of the term climate. It changes. Talk about when the dinosaurs were around, obviously it was much, much warmer. That had nothing to do with human activity, obviously. So that's the first thing they can do. But besides that, look beyond just the mainstream celebrity media. You have people like Al Gore, who isn't a scientist, by the way, and people like that, a lot of Hollywood celebrities that are jumping on this bandwagon because it's fashionable. But look beyond that. Look to different sources, and when they see something that is from a legitimate, reputable group, for instance, today, the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine, that's the group behind the 32,000 scientists, mm-hmm. Take a look at that, and you start to realize pretty quickly that their arguments carry the weight, that these things you see in what Rush Limbaugh calls the drive-by media, they're just giving you snippets. It's easy to be part of the crowd, but increasingly, people are going to see these sources and realize there's no consensus there.
How do we, here we are right at the, the beginning of hurricane season is just weeks away here, the Atlantic hurricane season, and the global warming hysteria. How does that bad science play in, do you think, to even things like insurance rates and stuff like that? And do you think there is, we don't want to be put our heads in the sand, and we don't want to be knuckle draggers on any issues at all, but do you think that there is a little bit of let's take it for what it's worth, and but also be able, as you said, to take it with some common sense in terms of, maybe there is something we each can do. Do you think it would make a difference for folks to pay attention to, recycling and things like that? I mean, is that what folks who are saying, this whole thing, the global warming hysteria, it's leading to bad science, there's climate confusion, that doesn't need to happen. Are they also saying you don't need to recycle, or are the two just not related, do you think, Tim?
Well, the two aren't necessarily related. There's nothing that we have against recycling. It's a preservation of the Earth's resources, and that's great. If people want to recycle, if they want to drive hybrids, if they want to drive cars that get greater fuel economy, that's all well and good. What we have a problem with is government compelling it and government instituting programs that harm the economy to no effect. So, recycling and things of that sort, they're not going to have any effect on global warming or climate change. Human activity itself, even if you eliminated human activity and took us back to the Stone Age, the Earth would still warm because it's mostly a natural fluctuation in the Earth's temperature. But that said, there's certainly nothing wrong with recycling. We all want to be caretakers of the Earth. We don't like pollution. Unfortunately, what you have to do is run a cost-benefit. We can't eliminate cars either because then our living as it currently exists would cease to exist. I mean, as I said, we'd have to go back to the Stone Age and stone wheels. But in terms of everyday taking care of the Earth's resources, of minimizing your family's costs, those are all great things. And so nobody's going to mock that. But what we do have a problem with is when they start saying that global warming or climate change is man-made and then instituting all these programs that will literally kill the economy. That's what we do have a problem with. And let me give you an example. A lot of the goals that some of the environmental advocates are trying to advance is that we need to reduce carbon emissions to 1990 levels or 80% below that. 80% below the 1990 levels would get us back to what we were emitting in 1776, burning coal and things of that sort for energy. We're simply not going to do that. So it's unrealistic to begin with. And here's an even more ironic aspect of it all. a lot of these people who are against so-called global warming and say that it's man-made, they simultaneously oppose nuclear energy, which emits no carbon. And so they try to have it both ways, and it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, let me ask you this, and we can talk a little bit more about this. We do need to take a break in just a minute, but what kinds of things are happening inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., that do you think of the report that came out today, as I said, the NOAA scientist who came out and changed his position on the issue of the relationship between global warming and the intensity of hurricanes, will that be heard within the Beltway, do you think? Will it make a difference? And are you aware of anything that is currently being considered on Capitol Hill as it relates to the issue of global warming?
Well, sure. It will be heard. It won't carry the day, as we said. The mainstream media isn't going to pick it up. But the mainstream media, as you and I know, is playing a smaller and smaller role each day in Americans' lives. Alternative media, whether it's on the Internet or radio programs like yours or Fox News, they're starting to prevail more in terms of the public audience. So, yes, it will get noticed. And in terms of what was the follow-up question?
Whether or not they're considering anything right now.
Oh, right. Yes, absolutely. Just last week, as a matter of fact, Congress considered drilling in ANWR, which would certainly help in terms of gaining America's fuel independence from foreign countries. But also they want to advance nuclear energy. So some people are taking the lead on this and doing things about it. Unfortunately, liberals control Congress right now, and so that's making it much more difficult. But absolutely, things are being attempted in Congress. It's being blocked, but drilling on the outer continental shelf, that's a vast pool of oil that would help free us of foreign oil dependence as well. And so there are people within Congress. Senator McConnell was the leader on that. He's the senator from Kentucky and the minority leader right now in the Senate. He is to be applauded for the action that he's taking on that. So the answer to your question is yes.
Does any of this relate to, and maybe you're not aware of this, and I apologize for asking you a question you may not know the answer to, but I read last week that polar bears have been put in the endangered list, I think it is.
Exactly.
Either threatened or endangered. I think that whatever it was, their status has been elevated. Mm-hmm. Have you seen reports? I mean, are the global warming hysterics out there screaming, "See, we told you so, we told you so"?
Unfortunately, they are grabbing onto that, but they shouldn't be. The polar bear population has actually been increasing over recent years. And so what you've got are some ice caps melting, but a lot of those, where the ice caps are melting in some places, in other places, the ice caps are growing. And so it's just a farce to say that the polar bear is somehow threatened with extinction because, again, we actually have more polar bears now than we did even a few years ago. The population is increasing, and so it's all a farce. And the people who made this ruling over at the EPA, they actually said not to infer too much about this in terms of global warming. So a lot of people may try to look at it as a hook, saying, "I told you so," but it's really not. It's unfortunate. They shouldn't have done what they did. But even at that, it's not something that's going to pivot the government, at least at this administration and at this point, to this global warming farce that we're seeing along the lines of Al Gore.
Okay, Tim, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have about 10 minutes left. If you've got a question for Tim, go ahead and give us a call, and we'll try and relay that question to him. We are talking about the issue of global warming and the relationship that there may or may not be between global warming and the intensity of hurricanes. According to a research meteorologist, Tom Knutson, in a study that just he released this week, he is, in fact, saying that global warming is not to blame for the recent jump in hurricanes. We'll talk more about that right after this break. Please stay tuned.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We are talking with Tim Lee from the Center for Individual Freedom, and we are talking about a study that was recently put out by Tom Knutson. Tom is a meteorologist who covers the issue of hurricanes. He's with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he's at their lab in Princeton, New Jersey. Tim, during the break, we took a couple of calls, and people have some questions for you. The first is, What is your take on Brazil becoming energy independent with sugarcane? Have you got a comment on that?
Well, with Brazil, the issue that I'm most familiar with is the tariffs that we put on some of their sugarcane. The ethanol issue is just becoming a disaster here in America. We have federal subsidies for it, and so we end up paying more than we get out of it. And Brazil grows a lot of sugarcane, which, as I understand it, can make ethanol much more efficiently than our corn and the limited amount of sugar that we are able to produce. And so I'm familiar with them up to that extent, and I have heard that they are independent from foreign oil in terms of their gasoline needs. The difference, though, we need to be really careful in drawing an analogy between the United States and Brazil, because Brazil has far, far fewer automobiles than we do. So it would be much easier for them to become energy independent than it would be for us. But nevertheless, I disagree with the tariffs that we slap on Brazilian sugarcane and Brazilian ethanol, because if we're really going to be dedicated to ethanol, we need to open our markets up to that. But the simple answer to the caller's question is that they have become more energy independent, but it's really because they have so many far fewer cars.
All right, on that issue of energy independence is our second question, and the caller wants to know if there's anything, if you can make any suggestions for what they should do, what can be done locally, at the state level, nationally, in order to get folks to talk about drilling, whether it's drilling in the Gulf, drilling, you know, ANWR, but get folks to look at that as an option. I mean, do you think bumper stickers will work, they want to know, writing letters, what would your thought be on that, and have you got any advice for them?
Well, that's a great question, and all of those courses of action are wonderful. The best thing to do, though, right now, I think, is to pressure your home state senators and members of the House of Representatives and tell them that we want energy independence, and the best way to get to that is allowing drilling in the Alaska wilderness and also on the outer continental shelf. Between the two of those things, we can almost eliminate our foreign oil dependency. And keep in mind that our number one seller of foreign oil is actually Canada. So we could completely wipe out our dependence on Middle Eastern foreign oil by drilling in Alaska, by drilling on the outer continental shelf, because they're vast pools. So we've got to beat on members of Congress and members of the Senate and let them know that we're not going to tolerate this much longer, that they need to allow that. What you usually hear are people talking about this wonderful wildlife refuge in Alaska. It's actually a barren territory. It's frozen 9 months out of the year, and for 3 months of the year, it's covered in darkness. It's flat. It has no mountains. It has very, very little vegetation. It's essentially an Arctic wasteland, and there's really no legitimate excuse for not tapping in those pools there. It's a vast resource for oil. And getting on your congressmen and senators to get this done is really important. But the bumper stickers, letters to the editor, just talking to your friends and letting them know how important this is and that America has a way to end its foreign oil dependence in Alaska and on the outer continental shelf, all of those things should work. But the best thing to do is make it very clear to politicians that we're not going to put up with this any longer.
Well, how likely do you think it is? I've heard floated around today the option folks are talking about to, I guess, punish Saudi Arabia if they don't increase their oil reserves and make them more available to us. How likely do you think it is that the United States would retaliate by not selling them the nuclear arms or the, I don't know what we sell them, military arms?
We do help sell them helpful military apparatus, certainly not nuclear weapons, but we do help them with radar planes and things of that sort, some fighter planes. No, I don't think that's likely, because that's cutting off our nose to spite our
face.
Again, if we want more oil, the best thing to do is drill it here in America, go to nuclear energy, go to the electric car that's coming out in a couple years. General Motors has built the Volt. And these are cars that you plug in at night. And, yes, they only go about 60 miles, I think, before the gasoline engine kicks in. But when you consider most trips are under 60 miles, that can be wonderful. They charge at night when most power plants aren't being used as much. And so it could be a great answer. So between electric cars and drilling here in America, that's the way to relieve our pressure at the pump, not begging the Saudis to pump more. They're almost tapping out as it is. And it was ludicrous for us to go do that. If liberals in Congress want us to end our foreign oil dependency, they need to stop blocking drilling in Anwar and on the outer continental shelf. It's as simple as that.
Do you know if the candidate's taken a position on that? I'm not asking you to endorse one or the other, but have they taken a position on drilling?
My understanding is that all three are against Anwar drilling right now. I sense, though, that Senator McCain is much more amenable to it. I think he's confused right now to the extent that he thinks that the Alaska wilderness is somehow equivalent to the Grand Canyon or drilling for oil in the Grand Canyon. And it's not that. I think, fortunately, Senator McCain at least is open to persuasion on this. And I think that, like the Bush tax cuts, he can kind of see the more reasonable course and change his mind accordingly. The other two, as I understand it, are flat out against it, particularly Senator Obama. My guess is that Senator Clinton would be a little more amenable to it, but I think Senator Obama is dead set against it.
Okay, Tim. Well, thanks so much. We appreciate your time today. We've been talking with Tim Lee. He's the Senior Vice President of Media and Legal Affairs with the Center for Individual Freedom. Tim, I've been telling folks how they can sign up for the free Lunchtime Liberty Update at CFIF.org. Any thoughts on what you're writing about this week? If they want to sign up and make sure that they get a chance to read your article this week, have you put any thoughts in yet on what it's going to be about?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be writing on this topic of the 32,000 scientists coming out against the global warming farce.
Oh, perfect.
They can look more into it there, so it's great timing.
It is great timing, and we appreciate very much your time this afternoon joining us again on the program. If you'd like to learn more about the work that Tim does, visit our organization's website at www.cfif.org. Tim, thanks again for your time. We appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thank you. You guys have a good night, too.
We'll be right back.